Good evening, Lehigh Valley. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse. And our topic this evening is the Lehigh Valley, a diverse view of the Lehigh Valley. And my guest this evening is Jose Antonio Ortiz. He is an entrepreneur. He is a TV producer. He's a host. He's an actor. He's a father. And he's here with us tonight to talk to us about not only his background and how he got to the Lehigh Valley, which is more unusual than most, as well as the cultural marketing that seems to be coming about and being more important today, especially in the Lehigh Valley. Before I bring in Jose Antonio, I would like to just provide you, our listeners, with a few statistics so that we're all thinking sort of from the same frame of reference. The Lehigh Valley's population has grown significantly over the past few years, and according to a recent Morning Call article, June 2017, by Tom Shortell, on the graying and diversifying of the Lehigh Valley population, Hispanics now make up 18.6% of the Lehigh Valley's population, on par with the 18% national average and more than double the state average of 7%. This same article quoted 2016 numbers as our median age in the U.S. is 37.9, where Pennsylvania's is 40.7, and Lehigh Valley 40.5. And the ethnicity gain or loss in our community has been in the white or Caucasian, 18,739 a loss, and Hispanic we've gained 25,983, and in the black community we've gained 5,079. So the changes in our population, both in age and diversity, have had significant impacts on our communities and will continue to do so in politics, in culture, in work, in health. And so tonight we're going to be talking about some of the significance of this growth of the Hispanic population in the Lehigh Valley. So Jose Antonio Ortiz, welcome.
Well, thank you for the invitation. I'm very happy to be here.
It's nice to have you on the other side of interviewing.
Yes, I have to say it's a little disconcerting.
Okay. You may have caught Jose Antonio on RCN. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your background? Don't tell them about how you got here yet, but tell them about your background as TV producer, an actor, an entrepreneur.
Well, this is a very long story, so we will try to give you the Reader's Digest version.
Okay.
We compress it a little bit. I am basically a television junkie.
Okay.
It's not only to watch television, and in fact, if you watch any game, any sport, or even any program with me, you probably will leave the room very, very soon. I look for mistakes. I look for camera angles. I look for mistakes that especially the announcers trying to pronounce different names. So not just watching television for entertainment, but I got involved in television production many years ago.
Okay, and so here in the Lehigh Valley, you were with Channel 39, is that correct?
That was my first stop in media.
Okay.
I started as, like many people, just as a cameraman, a production assistant. Within 3 months, I was already directing. Within 7 months, no, actually it was more like a year, I started to produce, to executive produce one series, and went from there. I didn't start being an on-air talent until about 7 years into my tenure.
Okay, so you were guiding everybody, and then you decided to get in front of the camera.
I didn't decide it.
Oh, you were told you were getting in front of the camera.
Exactly. It was a need for me to do it. It was I remember we were having a special program, 1 hour, with the IRS. We were talking about taxes.
Oh, always.
And it was
lovely.
In Spanish. We had the expert from the IRS. And we had everything except my hostess couldn't make it from Kutztown. In March. It was a very snowy day. When she called, I didn't panic. I just thought, well, we have to do something about it. And everyone told me, well, you're the only one who speaks Spanish in the whole staff. So you will do it. at that moment, I thought early, well, sure. I mean, how difficult can it be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I direct, I produce it, I piece of cake.
Mm-hmm.
Half hour before we went on air, when people told me half hour to air time is when everything came down crushing on me. You know how it is. The voice goes away. You cannot breathe.
You can't think.
And well, we have to go to the table and in front of the cameras. And I remember telling everyone, you know, you have done this before. You are the experts. If I pass out, just continue without me. They laugh. I felt like, oh, okay. It's not going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
And from then on.
Yeah.
So for me, it was one time only. And, well.
You got hooked.
Well, not exactly hooked, but I'm more at ease doing it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I remember once when I was working for the bank, they had me do a commercial. And I think we were on take 49 before it actually got finished. I was like a nervous wreck. It's
yes.
Horrible. But so, okay, so you were at 39, you were at RCN, and you are at RCN now, correct?
Yes.
And you
yes.
have a current show. Would you share that with our listeners, what the show
sure.
is?
Sure. The name is Nuestro Valle, which in Spanish means our valley. About 10, almost 11 years ago, RCN as a company decided to do some programming adequate to the Latino population. The subscribers, well, they sometimes demand that something is in Spanish. And mm-hmm. we thought, okay, the typical mentality was, let's have one show in Spanish, once a month. And I thought, yeah, I can produce once a month.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same deal. Everything fell through with the hostess. She quit the weekend before we started to tape the first show.
Oh, boy.
So I was asked to fill in also as a host, and I did, with the condition, after this show, you have to hire someone. Well, they came back to me saying, not only you have to keep doing it, but it's going to be a weekly show, not a monthly.
Oh, boy, that really...
With the condition that they were going to find someone.
Yeah,
they
no.
lied to me.
Oh. Well, actually, no, they didn't lie. They liked what you did.
Well, they should have said that in the first time.
That worked out well. But so, and this show that you're doing now is both in English and Spanish?
And Spanish. Sometimes we have both languages in the same show.
Okay.
I don't particularly like it because you waste too much time translating the answers. So you're... actual time is half.
Right.
Asking the important questions. So I try to do either in English or in Spanish, sometimes the same topic from the same agency, but both
yes. English and Spanish.
But never at the same time.
Okay. All right. I know in prep for my once a month show here on Lehigh Valley Discourse, you know, there's a fair amount of time that I spend, you know, pulling all the information resources together. I can't imagine on a weekly show. And you tape several together, correct?
I do. We try to do five or six, depending on the need. We have the use of the studio only once a month.
Okay.
But sometimes there are other events that will fall on my tape date. So I have to think ahead. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For this month, I need to tape 5 or 6 shows. It's a tough job. People think, well, you're just sitting there talking.
Oh, no, there's
well,
a lot of background.
It's 4, 5, or 6 different topics and different sets of guests.
Yes.
And you know how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Every guest is different. And you approach every interview in a very special way.
Right.
No, 2 guests are the same. So,
yeah,
yes,
so that's boy, that's active. Now, your journey to the Lehigh Valley has been much different than most of those who have come to the Hispanic community in the Lehigh Valley. I would dare say that a lot of people initially came because of the industry here, because of Bethlehem Steel and some other industry, and then others came because of relatives. Mm-hmm. But your journey was a little bit different. Can you share that with our listeners? I found that very fascinating.
Well, I was afraid you were going to ask that. In a way, it started, of course, what you already said. Bethlehem Steel was a big industry, so my grandparents came. They met here, they got married, and then they moved to Mexico.
Okay.
Some of my uncles and my mom were born here, but they moved to Mexico. So by virtue of my mother being already a citizen, a born citizen, I always had that chance of becoming an American citizen. Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, I was already a citizen, just not declared.
Right.
Was never my intention to move to this country. I had carved what I thought was a really nice career going on in Mexico. Things happened. I had an engagement that was broke off, but I had all this time accumulated for vacation that was supposed to be for my honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of doing that, I thought, I'm not giving this up. I'm going to travel to visit my family in United States, New York, and the Lehigh Valley, Bethlehem and Allentown.
Wow. So
that's how it started. Just a nonchalant coming to visit my family, which I already knew. They used to come and visit in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So I already knew them. It just was never my intention to remain in this country or in the Lehigh Valley.
Oh, we kept you, did we?
Yes, somebody... Somebody did.
Somebody snagged you up and you found a family here.
Pretty much. And now, I've been here for 32 years.
Okay.
And things happened in Mexico. At the time I came, 1985, there was a big earthquake in Mexico City. The place I used to work for collapsed. One of the hospitals that collapsed, killing pretty much everyone.
Oh.
Imagine losing half your friends in that just one
incident,
morning.
Yeah, no.
At the time, I couldn't go back because everything, all the flights were dedicated to rescue and aid. So I couldn't get back. And in the meantime, well, I started to go around and got sick, ended up in the hospital, met who is now my wife. So I think she married me because she wanted free Spanish lessons.
Yep.
That didn't work too well for her. She still doesn't speak Spanish.
Well, she has a personal interpreter now, though.
Well, yeah, and that's I like it that way.
Yeah, great. Well, congratulations to you and your wife.
Well,
that's wonderful. Before we really get to start about what they're calling now cultural marketing, and tonight mm-hmm. we're looking at really pointedly the Hispanic or the Latino community, I know I get confused sometimes with the terms and when's appropriate to say Hispanic, when is appropriate to say Latino or Latinx, I've seen. can you just give our listeners sort of a little bit of an education of what is appropriate?
Well, I don't know if there is any particular term that will be appropriate. Depends on who you talk to.
Okay.
In my point of view, I am an American and I'm a North American.
Right.
Because Mexico is part of North America.
Mm-hmm.
Mexico is part of America.
Right.
I was always a citizen, declared United States of America citizen for about 20 some years.
Okay.
Now. And I get this question all the time. What should I call you?
Mm-hmm.
Latino or Hispanic? When I started to think about the term Hispanic, panic. I don't want to be anyone's panic.
Okay.
Okay. That's how I feel.
Okay.
Latino. Well, I came from Mexico. If you call me Mexican, I can sort of feel something about the term. Latino doesn't apply to me. Hispanic doesn't really move me in any way, shape, or form. I think... we're given a chance. Imagine if all the Hispanics or Latinos or Latinx were going to get together
mm-hmm.
as a group. imagine the potential, not only economic, social, and political.
Absolutely.
Imagine the cloud mm-hmm. that we're, as a monolithic group that people think we are not. So in a sense, we are our worst enemies.
Okay, so that's a challenge. Like with white Caucasian, it just sort of blankets everything.
I am like white Caucasian. And yeah. If I have to fill all these little squares, well, through my DNA test, I found out that I'm also Celtic, I am Jewish, and I am African, and I guess American Indian or Native American.
Native American, okay.
So imagine all the little boxes I have to fill. And yeah. I think you will have the same.
Yeah.
Maybe less or maybe more. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I had that DNA test done too, and it was very interesting. I was hoping for some more diverse background, but I got Western European.
Okay.
So it's basically English and Irish and French and a little Scandinavian, I think.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A little bit thrown in there. So, you know, as a business person, and if I'm approaching you as a potential client and there becomes a conversation that, you know, I need to refer to the culture, how do I do it appropriately?
I think, again, depending on who you're talking to, somebody told me once, and the term Hispanic, meaning descendant from Spain,
mm-hmm.
or a migrant from Spain, well, that kind of encompasses pretty much all what is now known as Latin America,
right.
Or the Caribbean. I mean, look at mm-hmm. Dominican Republic, look at Puerto Rico, Cuba. I'm sorry, Cuba. We're in America, we speak American, right?
Yeah.
So that will be probably the most appropriate term.
Okay.
Latin America, Latino. Well, if you tell an Italian person that he's Latino, it will be a fighting word. I am not Latino. Well, Latin is from the Latin roots, right?
Right.
So Italian is...
Is Latin?
Latin. French is also Latin.
Okay.
Portuguese is also Latin. So, but they don't like that.
Get offended.
They get offended.
And I think that's probably what's made it very difficult for businesses to figure out how to market to that segment. I mean, as I quoted in the beginning, there's a significant population, 18.6%, and it's growing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's coming to a fifth of the population, and it may be something more within the next 5 years. But that's the overall. Yes. But within that, you're telling us that there's some segments, and you have to direct what you're doing to those segments. You can't do a blanket approach, correct?
No. And as I say before, we are our worst enemies. You know, if I'm Mexican, then why should I support a Colombian or an Ecuadorian? Well, just because you have so many things in common. Yes, you have some things that are different, mm-hmm. and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Each country has a different culture, different food, different, everything that encompasses a culture.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And, you know, you think about it here in this country, the North, the South, the West, you know, we're all a little bit different.
But we're Americans, right?
Right. We all have to work together. Well, we're going to be taking a short break, listener. My guest is Jose Antonio Ortiz, entrepreneur, TV producer, and host. I'm Sally Hanlon. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Well, welcome back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse with our guest this evening, Jose Antonio Ortiz. He's an entrepreneur and TV producer and host. We're talking about the changing demographics of the Lehigh Valley with a focus on the Hispanic population of the Lehigh Valley. So when we took a break, we were just talking about the different segments within the Hispanic, Latino, Mexican, population, and how as a business it's difficult to know how to approach because of the cultural nuances of mm-hmm. those different segments. Now, you have been an entrepreneur both in Mexico and in the Lehigh Valley. What have some of the challenges been to you, number one, as an entrepreneur in both those countries, but then as an entrepreneur seeking clients, and your approach? Can you share with some of our listeners who may want to clue into that?
Sure. Well, the main difference obviously will be the cultural difference. Mm-hmm. In Mexico, I knew how to navigate the system. In Mexico is changing, I have to say that, after so many years away from Mexico and then going back and talking to my nieces and nephews, and I can see the big change. Mm-hmm. It's getting more Americanized. We never had the different times,
daylight savings. Okay.
Nothing like that. There's no need. Mexico City is really close to the Tropic of Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So the times are pretty much the same. And the days vary a little bit, but not significantly. Well, now, because of doing business with the United States, they have to change as well.
Oh.
So that's the cultural part is a little different. But getting back to the original point, it was easy for me to navigate the system in Mexico. Coming here as an entrepreneur, there are rules that have nothing to do with what I used to do.
And you were a photographer, correct?
Photographer, mm-hmm. and that's my one of my biggest loves. Not too much anymore. Now everything is video. Don't even have a video camera anymore.
You have your phone.
You have your phone, and that makes wonderful pictures. You still have to learn how to use it. It's not just point and click.
Oh, you don't? That's what I do.
Well, there are so many things you can do, especially with the newest phones. The video, I just came back from a trip with my daughter. She had an idea to have a presentation for her class in paranormal. So we went to one of the most haunted places in America, Salem, Massachusetts.
Okay, where the witches were.
Yes, and she was so interested in doing that. And I started to look at my old video cameras, well, all about 3-4 years old. Mm-hmm. And I started to recharge batteries, and I asked her, which camera you want me to use? And she said, oh, don't take it. Use your iPhone. And I what? I'm a video producer. You don't do things in your video phone. Well, I was wrong.
Yeah.
I love it.
Good.
And it's so easy.
Yeah.
But you still have to learn. So those are the things going to attract clients. Well, to me, in a way, it was easy because I speak Spanish. So now all the companies, all the big corporations are big, trying to attract not only clients, but they are trying to attract qualified
suppliers.
Employees,
and
suppliers. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about doing business with the minority groups, you have to talk their language, not only the official language of their country, but the way they interpret things.
Have to express it or the way they...
Exactly. I am not exactly a huggy person, but it's because I'm about Mexican. People tell me, oh, we love Mexicans because they hug you and they give you a kiss, and I'm like, no, we don't. Well, some do.
Some do.
I don't. So there are so many nuances that a person wants to do business with and for the minority groups have to speak their language.
So the way that, let's say I wanted to do that with my business, I would have to undergo some cultural training or find someone, maybe someone like you, to be able to help me understand the correct approach to a specific segment.
Yeah, yes, many companies are doing that.
Because if I used my approach that I use for general, it probably would not be interpreted the same way.
It would be interpreted as rude.
Rude.
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way you do business. We do business in this country. It's direct. Okay, these are the facts. This is your goal. And to get to that goal, we do this A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. It's very organized. It's no diversions. But sometimes when you go to a minority group, it's like, okay, this is what I want to do. Give me two or three scenarios. And you're thinking, no, I'm giving you one scenario that is going to work.
Yeah.
Then I go up with somebody else.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Years ago when I was in the corporate world and we were beginning to start to do some of the global marketing, there was a big push on understanding the cultural nuances, especially in Asia, you know, and being a woman and understanding what you can and cannot do and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't seem to me, and maybe it's because of the border proximity of the Hispanic culture, that corporations have done the same thing, at least not in the past. You know, that they haven't really educated to the degree that they did with Japan and China and some of the other countries.
It's changing, but I remember the first my first exposure to the business world here. It was, well, we're there for business. If they want my business, they have to speak my language. And they have to abide by my rules.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's, I think we're coming back to that because of political climate, and we are our country first. And
America first. Okay.
And we are getting back to, okay, if they want to do business, they have to do it by my rules. Well, back then, they started to find out that it was better to adapt a little bit, to find out what the person wanted to hear from me in order for them to do business with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, there's the same thing I remember, again, when, in my banking career, that in the 80s, late 80s, we did a lot of diversity training so that we could work with each other. And I figured my biggest aha was the gender differences.
Yes.
And I finally understood why when I said certain things, I didn't get the reaction out of my husband that I thought I should because of the filters, the screen. I just thought everybody thought the way I did. You know, that was my world.
You know, that is a key. Not everyone thinks the way we do.
Mm-hmm.
So communications, I have to remember what my wife keeps telling me. God gave you one mouth. And 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that you have to listen to what the person is saying. Not start thinking, oh, this is what I'm going to respond. And I'm searching all my data bank with all the numbers and statistics. No, listen to what the person is talking about.
Well, and that is today being re-emphasized. I read a lot of McKinsey reports on management and the listening by the C-suite of those underneath, again, is sort of rising to the top of what needs to be done in corporate America.
Mm-hmm. It's not any longer, I went to school, I got my master's and then my doctorate degree, and I know everything.
Yeah.
Wrong. When you are in med school, for instance, you get all the knowledge that your teachers, your doctors, your proctors, they all telling you this is what medicine is. The moment this new doctor gets into a hospital, there is a head nurse. And the head nurse is very nice and very polite. So, doctor, welcome. And we're going to teach you how it really is done.
Get the real life.
Get a humble beginning because guess what? You learn the theory, and that's wonderful. You need that.
Mm-hmm.
But the practicality of the theory sometimes do not go hand by hand.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've had a very unique, I think, view, especially of the medical industry.
Everything's changing.
Yeah, everything's changing quickly. But you wanted to study medicine, correct?
Well, that was...
Last century.
Exactly, last century. You go through life, and you have all these grandiose expectations of your own life, and you say, well, I would like to do this, I would like to do that, and the doctor is so close to being a god, right? Mm-hmm. And some doctors believe they are not only close to, but they are gods. They are good, but they are not gods. And you go thinking, well, the doctor is a person who will take care of you. I remember our doctor in Mexico used to come to the house. You know, when's the last time you heard a doctor in the United States going to do a house visit other than your very good friend?
Yeah, I'm probably the same thing when I was about 10. Was about mm-hmm.
All that has changed.
Yeah.
Doctors now really don't have as much say as before. Now is the insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
And they determine, well, this person is suitable for this. According to our calculations, he will recover. Okay, we can agree to this surgery. If they don't qualify you as a candidate, good luck.
Yeah. You read more and more about that.
Mm-hmm.
But and what I was trying to also get to is you are an actor in, you know, part of your background is medicine, but you also do roles in training films.
Well, back in the 90s, the corporate world affected all the hospitals, and they started to come up with, you have to have a team.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you're the patient, but your team, you know, I forgot what the term was. It was the person who was going to come to pick you up after the surgery. That person will have to be someone that you trust because it's going to be entrusted with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be entrusted with your meds and has to commit to be with you the better part of the first 24 hours. So there were so many changes that had to go in all the hospitals. Somebody came up with a great idea. Let's have videos teaching
mm-hmm.
the hospital personnel and the patients what this team was supposed to do. So, of course, all these hospitals in Reading and I believe in the Lehigh Valley as well started to contract with this company. And I thought, well, that's nice. Good, you're doing that. Well, my part was to do the voiceover in Spanish.
Okay.
Not as an advisor. But I made good money mm-hmm. doing that. But that already changed. I mean, these constant changes in the way we are perceiving and getting the health care is changing year to year.
Yeah. Well, there's disruption, I think, in every single industry today.
Yes.
And it's happening at such a fast pace that mm-hmm. it's really hard. You know, we sort of catch up in arrears. We're never really ahead of that wave anymore.
Yeah.
We're just trying to hold on to it and ride it through.
And there is one more part that a lot of hospitals are missing. They need translators. People who can understand both languages and the medical terminology. Because they are the ones who have to communicate to the patient. Up until recently, it was, if you don't have a 5 or 10-year-old niece or nephew or son, good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can call someone from the cleaning department to come and translate.
Yeah, and that is difficult. I mean, the mm-hmm. medical language itself, even though I read it in English, it's hard to
yes.
sometimes decipher, let alone put into another language.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And are you still doing those types of activities?
Not the instructional videos too much. As an actor, yes.
Okay.
I'm typecast as a doctor.
Oh, okay.
There are commercials for networks, health networks, and it's so funny because my daughter lives in just outside Philadelphia. She asked me, Dad, were you a doctor in this commercial? Yes, I was. And I have a good friend who is also typecast as a lawyer. She has been all over the place, too.
Interesting.
It's very interesting, yes.
Yeah, that fun work. Well, let me get back to sort of business here in the Valley and
why?
The yeah, well, I want to know. You know, you pulled some demographic information about...
You already alluded to that.
Oh, okay.
You beat me to it.
You're
a good host. You did your homework. And I know it's sometimes difficult. But the Census Bureau has a wonderful tool that anyone in business can tag. And I suggest people do it. It's very simple. Census, U.S. Census Bureau.gov, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pull all the statistics just to know that the Latinos, the Hispanics, the Spanish-speaking population is growing tremendously, especially after last year's Maria.
Yeah, with all the hurricanes, yes.
And all of a sudden, I remember watching one of the networks. They were talking to the governor of Puerto Rico. And I have to laugh because he said it in a way, well, I don't know what was his intention, but he said, well, just imagine if you don't help us, you will have all these Puerto Ricans going to the mainland. Do you want that? And he's the governor of Puerto Rico. It's like saying, oh, you know, I really hope you will come and help us and
keep everybody here.
People can come back. And I have to tell you this, a lot of the Puerto Ricans that came, that I know that came because of the hurricane, they want to go back, especially this past month.
Oh, with
all the snow.
Crazy weather we've had this winter.
The first time they see snow, how beautiful. The third time is, oh, no, please. And they keep dreaming of going back to Puerto Rico. A lot of the Mexicans that came before all this brouhaha had the same. They came here for the economic opportunity. And they knew they had a better chance here.
Mm-hmm.
But they never had the intention of staying. They had the intention to go back. They sent money and they invested. They are really smart people. But all this demonizing, I heard that certain person wanted to deport all the Puerto Ricans first. They are citizens.
Yeah, they're part of us.
Of course. It's just, well, you know.
I'll tell you. Well, you get back to communication and understanding, and you talk about, you know, one mouth and two ears. I always figured communication was a fine art, and everybody's in the finger paint stage.
Yes.
You just can't seem to get it into a fine brush and an understanding of what people are doing and where they're going. We're going to be taking another short break shortly, and I do want to get back to talking about marketing and, you know, any tips you can provide to existing businesses or businesses that are growing, want to be entrepreneurs, about dealing with the Hispanic community. So again, we're going to take a short break. My guest this evening is Jose Antonio Ortiz. He's an entrepreneur, TV producer, host, and this is Sally Hanlon, your host on Lehigh Valley Discourse.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
If you've just tuned in, welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is Sally Hanlon, your host this evening, and my guest is Jose Antonio Ortiz. He's an entrepreneur, TV producer, host, actor, father, hits a lot of those whistles. We're talking about the changing demographics of the Lehigh Valley, and with a focus in this last segment to talk about business and what business can do to engage our growing Hispanic community in not only their business, but in the leadership of the Lehigh Valley. So let's talk first, Jose Antonio, about... Okay, we mentioned demographics. The U.S. Census has some information, but that's sort of dated. Mm-hmm. How do we sort of look forward to what is important and how do we market to the Hispanic community? Or how do we develop products that they're looking for?
You know, that's a $1 million question.
Okay.
it has like the same population, the same demographic you're trying to tag, so many sides. To begin with, there are rules that some people might not be aware. We come from a culture that you don't tell people you need help. You're supposed to do it yourself, and if anything, maybe your immediate family or a really close friend.
Okay.
You tag him for a loan that probably you are never going to pay back.
getting a grant.
Pretty much, but it's called a loan. When you come here, it's not the same. You know, you can go to a bank, but before you go to a bank, you need to show that you have credit.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm guilty of not trying to use my credit card as much. Guess what? It's a useful tool. You have to build up your credit.
Mm-hmm.
All these different rules and regulations have to be educated to or afford to all these new entrepreneurs. They have to understand what credit means. Well, you know, I was late with my payment 1 or 2 days, but that's okay. No, it's not. You better be sure that you send your payment almost 2 weeks ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows that you are a very responsible person.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pay your whole bill, right? If you have a credit, will be easier. Mm-hmm. That's one of them. Business plan. Very important. I don't know why people might think that, I can just open my store and everything is going to be hunky-dory.
Mm-hmm.
No. There are so many things that you have to... So educate. Education is the only equalizer in life. I live by that. If you educate people, and not necessarily with a degree, with a little paper that said he came to blah, blah, blah university, that means nothing if you didn't get the education that you needed.
Okay, and what's playing in my head as you say that is you teach a man how to fish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they will eat forever. You give them a fish, they will eat that day.
Right.
And that's exactly. You cannot just say, okay, I'll help you with this. No, you have to educate. You have to educate them in just not only the I have to do better for myself. You're doing this for your family. You're doing this to better your community.
Mm-hmm.
If you show the community that you care about them, well, guess what? They are going to support your business.
Mm-hmm.
All these things have to be, to me, that's the help.
Okay, so that's like the primer.
The primer, exactly.
To get somebody in a position where they can become an entrepreneur or they can...
Exactly. If you want to, sell your product
mm-hmm.
to this community, mm-hmm. well, guess what? You have to know what... takes this community, what not takes, but what moves this community.
Right.
Family, that will be to the top. Religion, well, I guess it's important,
there.
But yeah. it's not, the first thing will be the family.
Okay.
If you have your ad picturing a family and saying, I don't know, you have to quit smoking because of them.
Right, secondhand smoke, yeah.
Absolutely, but you don't call it secondhand, you are quitting because of them.
Okay.
So your family is important, and I can give you the treatment for that.
Okay, so if I were to say you should quit because of your family, do I not have to say why, you know, because the secondhand smoke impact on them or the shortening of your life or...
It will come. And that will be the first thing that will get in their minds. And then they will start investing. We are, like everybody, we are curious people.
Okay, so you dangle something.
Let me find out. And then you tag them with secondhand smoking kills people.
Okay. All right.
Family, community.
And community, not necessarily Lehigh Valley community, though, a subset of the Lehigh Valley community.
Yes.
So you have to figure out where that is
exactly.
or what it is.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes your community is more than just your neighborhood or just the Lehigh Valley. I love to participate in Mexican cultural center activities. That's a bigger community.
Okay.
And if someone tells me that... this is affecting the way we do commerce with Mexico, that will get my attention.
Okay.
For sure. Mexico, incidentally, is the second most important partner with Pennsylvania, commercially speaking.
Oh, really?
Well, yes.
Is there a certain product base or just in general?
Other than marijuana. We don't say that. But there are so many companies that went to Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Car companies.
Well, one just came back.
Right.
Martin Guitars.
Oh,
Mexicans love music. And it's funny because there are two animated movies mm-hmm. that came out. Different takes on the Day of the Dead.
Yes.
One is Bullfighter family and the other one is a shoemaker family. But they both say that the actual inclination, the natural inclination of the kids was music.
Interesting.
So Mexicans love music. Day of the Dead, well, I enjoy that festivity so much. And I get so mad because people think, oh, that's a Mexican Halloween. It has nothing to do with Halloween. Halloween is the empty celebration, I guess.
Yeah.
And this is the Day of the Dead. It's a subject for another show.
Okay, so now you're saying the Mexican love music. Do the Puerto Ricans love music?
Absolutely.
Okay, is that a common denominator in a lot of the Hispanic culture?
Probably, is besides the language. And the language, the Spanish spoken in Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic and Mexico are so different.
All different dialects.
It depends where the Spaniards came and they stayed. And that's the
dominant language
side of the Spanish language. Yes.
So if the spoken language is different because of the dialects, mm-hmm. is the written language any different, or is the written language the same? It's just how it's
pretty much the same. It's just the way it's expressed.
So it's like me trying to understand my Southern relatives with their draw. I can't figure out what the Harry they're saying most of the time. Okay.
Yes. You all?
Yeah.
You all?
Okay.
So this there are so many. Music, though, is different. If you talk to anyone about mariachi music, oh, we love it. It doesn't matter if they are from Chile, Peru, anywhere in South America, anywhere in Central America, in the Caribbean, in the world. A couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago, there was designation of the International Month of the Mariachi Music.
Oh.
And there were competitions. And when I saw Chinese mariachi band, and they are singing the Mexican songs I grew up with, like they were Mexicans.
Oh, my goodness.
And they don't speak Spanish. But they sing. Linda Ronstadt.
Mm-hmm.
She had this album, Canciones de mi Padre. And she admitted she didn't speak a word of Spanish, but she sung like she was Mexican.
Well, and I've had the different approach. Some of the French and the Canadian singers, they could sing English very well, but I can't understand them when they're speaking.
Yes. Yeah, it's the same.
Yeah. Interesting.
So the music is also a big part of the culture. If you want to do business with that segment,
mm-hmm.
you have to do their music, their food. And that's another thing. You cannot do business with me unless we share a meal.
Oh, okay. And so that's to start the business relationship, you should share the meal?
Yes.
Okay, interesting. So we've got family, we've got music, we've got food.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so those are all things that someone should consider as they're trying to figure out how to put their mm-hmm. best foot forward with the Hispanic community.
Another thing, the Hispanic customer is a very loyal customer. I've seen, I used to do business with certain phone company because that's what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And I was loyal to them until I saw the difference in price. Then, by then, I was too American and said, this is not for me.
Okay.
So I went with the right company. But they are very loyal.
Okay. So, and the other thing that I would assume, and I shouldn't say that word, but once you gain a client from a different culture, from the Hispanic culture, you've got to be able to service them. So it's not just the initial, aha, come use my product or service, but if you have a question, I've got to be able to answer it appropriately.
Absolutely. And don't give me the press one for this, press three for that, and press 100 if you want a human being.
Right, right. So and that probably is the one aspect that many businesses really don't think about. They're after the sale, but what happens after the sale is made and you've gotten the client?
Well, you know, all the big companies, Olympus, they have employees from all over the world.
International. Mm-hmm.
And I have been in touch with some vice presidents and some directors.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't met a Hispanic or Latino vice president, but they're on their way.
Mm-hmm.
They are climbing the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's reassuring.
Yes. Yeah, very, very much so. Interesting. So let's get to the entrepreneurs again. If a young Hispanic or maybe someone in their second career is thinking about being an entrepreneur and starting something up here in the Lehigh Valley, but obviously coming from their roots, do you have any words of wisdom for them as to things they should think about? And I mean, we've talked about credit and mm-hmm. financing being one of them, but is there anything else that you would give as sort of tips to make sure that these folks follow a good path and don't get too many potholes in their journey?
Mm-hmm. Learn from the potholes. Learn where they are and avoid them, number one. Number two, don't be afraid to ask for help. Help is all over the place. There are so many agencies catering to that.
Mm-hmm.
And be sure that you get in touch with the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. They have wonderful opportunities in the form of
programs, education.
Programs, yeah, marketing, multicultural marketing. That's a very important mm-hmm. point. And, well, you already said, don't be afraid to ask. And be passionate on what you're taking on. You cannot go halfway. If producing a program is your passion, then go full-heartedly to that. Don't go 80%, no, go 150%.
Mm-hmm.
And be sure that that passion stays where it has to be.
And I think that's good advice for anybody who wants to go into business. It's the passion that will carry you through when mm-hmm. the revenue is on the lighter side coming in, and passion will get you to the next level.
Yes.
Because certainly there are a lot of doubters out there, and unless you're passionate, they tend to trip you up.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing is, it's not a lottery. You're not going to buy the ticket and you're going to win the lottery.
Yeah.
Be prepared. When you decide to go on business on your own, you have enough money to survive for at least a year or two.
I would say at least a year. Mm-hmm. Or if there's a secondary source of income that you can rely
Absolutely.
On, usually a partner or a spouse can help through that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not easy, but it certainly is rewarding to make that journey.
If you're doing what you really are passionate about, yes.
Mm-hmm.
If not, you're in the wrong position.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Jose Antonio, we were talking about people rising levels like at Olympus mm-hmm. in the organization. One of the things, I've on several boards here in the Lehigh Valley and have been most of my adult life, we've had difficulty in getting representation from mm-hmm. our diverse communities on our boards. It's been mostly white and white male for a long time. And, we're slowly getting a little bit of diversity, but How can the nonprofits look to get a more diverse board to represent the population that they're trying to serve?
Another million-dollar question. Okay. I am dealing with that since I first moved here.
Okay, and that was back in the 80s.
Yeah, back in the 80s. And my good boss, Shel Siegel, was pushing me to, this board of directors, you should belong there.
Mm-hmm.
First thing I found out, number one, those agencies or those companies don't have Spanish-speaking representation in the top levels. That's number one. Number two, we can do just so much. We are here to advance our own families. We have bills to pay. We don't have the time to dedicate to any board because sometimes we have to work two
jobs.
Or two and a half jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no time for that.
Okay.
Plus, we have a family.
Mm-hmm.
So it is difficult as the economic opportunities are arising and that are coming to the Hispanic population, you will see more people engage. The other thing is very important to me. We are used to don't draw attention to yourself. Culture is, that's not nice. Only the ones who are worthless are the ones saying, pick me. And that's why they are not picked. Now, if you come to me and ask me directly, you know, we can really use your help. I will have really hard time saying no, because you're asking me. And then when I go towards being in the board of directors, I will say, I was asked. Mm-hmm. I didn't volunteer. I was asked to do it.
Okay, so you have to keep it very personal.
Yes.
And a personal invitation. Take them out to a meal.
Yes, which I think that was a very nice idea.
Yeah, okay. Now there is the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. There's the African American Chamber of Commerce.
Yes.
There's the Hispanic.
The LGBTQ.
So we've got some diversity there. But there's now the community centers, the cultural centers. There was one in Allentown, a Hispanic center, and there was one in South Bethlehem. Are they still resources for people to, for the Spanish community, where the Spanish community comes together and, mm-hmm. you know, maybe there's an opportunity to learn there, to educate, and maybe find some folks?
Oh, yes. That's a wonderful opportunity right there.
Okay, and they're both. It's been a long time since I've been familiar with them, but
they are still
in existence.
There are two in Allentown, HAO, Hispanic American Organization, and Casa Guadalupe.
Oh, that's right, Casa Guadalupe.
Yes.
Okay, that's been around a long time.
And in the south side, there is a Spanish Center. Used to be the Council of Spanish-Speaking Organizations of the Lehigh Valley.
Thank you. I couldn't remember what
yes.
that was. It was back there in that archive I have, but mm-hmm. okay, all right. Jose Antonio Ortiz, thank you so much for being a part of the show today and for sharing your view of the Lehigh Valley and what you've done and what you've learned with others. I think the fact that our population is growing so much in the Hispanic community, we have got to pay attention and support. So any last words for our listeners that you'd like to share?
Just keep doing what you are doing. And there is, we have dreams, we have desires. Go for them. Don't hurt anyone on the process.
Okay. Terrific. Again, thank you for being here with us tonight. I want to also thank Neil Heaver, who's our operation director. And thank you for listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse.